Om, repeat after me. Om mauna vyakya prakatita. Om mauna vyakya prakatita. Parabrahma tattvam yuvanam. Parabrahma tattvam yuvanam. Varshishtante vasudvrishiganayihi. Varshishtante vasudvrishiganayihi. Avritam brahmanishtayihi. Avritam brahmanishtai acharyendram karakalita chinmudram acharyendram karakalita chinmudram anandamurtim anandamurtim swatmaramam muditavadanam swatmaramam muditavadanam dakshinamurtimide Dakshinamurtimide. Let's go to page 6. Rahu grasta divakarendi sadrishaha. Rahu grasta divakarendi sadrishaha. Maya samachadanat. Maya samachadanat sanmatra karano pasamharanatah sanmatra karano samharatah yo bhut sushupta puman yo bhut sushupta puman pragaswap samiti prabodha samaye prabodha samaye Yav pratya vijñāyate, yav pratya vijñāyate, tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam, tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam, shri dakshina murtaye, shri dakshina murtaye.
I'll go through the meaning of this again and then unfold it. We did it last week, but I'll do it again. Rahu grasta divakara indu sadrishaha maya samachadanat sanmatraha karana upasamharanataha yaha abhut shushuptaha puman prak aswapsam iti prabodha samaye yaha pratyabhijñāyate tasmai shri gurumurtaye nama idam namaha idam shri dakshinam shri dakshinam shri dakshinam murtaye. Rahu grasta is an eclipse. The eclipse means the sun, Rahu. The sun is being eaten by Rahu. It's being consumed by Rahu. Rahu is like the shadow of the sun, but it's actually the Rahu is a, it's not exactly a planet, but it's like a planet. If you've ever seen Vedic astrology, Rahu and Ketu are the two ends, like the two shadow planets, kind of. And there, when Swamiji talks about Rahu, it's Rahu is that shadow actually will eat the sun or eat the moon, like an eclipse. You can look at an eclipse as coming and eating, devouring the sun or devouring the moon with an eclipse. So like that, Rahu comes and devours, covers, swallows the sun and the moon. So, but if you just give the name Rahu Grasta, that which is eaten or consumed by Rahu, it's a word for eclipse. So Devakara, Divakara, Divakara means the day maker, means the sun. That which makes the day is the name for the sun. It's Divakara, so the maker of the sun. Or Indu means moon. So Sadrishaha means just like the sun or the moon in an eclipse, which are being consumed, eaten by Rahu. So the sun, just like the sun and moon in an eclipse. It says, Maya Samachadanat. From the covering of Maya, just keep the words for now, Maya Samachadanat, from the covering of Maya. Sanmatraha means pure being. Karana upasamharanataha means from the resolution of the sense organs and mind, that human, the person, Puman, Shushuptaha, who is sleeping. So let me take this. Let me do it all, and just so that you have some idea of what the words mean, and then I'll do the Vigraha, or I'll make sense of it. Then Prak Aswapsamiti. Before Prak Aswapsam, I slept. Earlier I slept. Iti. Somebody says. Prabodhasamiye. At the time of waking up. So that person, he who, yaha, pratibhignayate, who has a pratibhigna, who has a remembrance at the time of waking up that I slept, to that person, Sri Gurumurti, in the form of my guru, my salutations to Lord Dakshinamurti. It's hard to just see it in this word order, but so now let me make sense of it. It starts like this. A person who is sleeping, Puman means a person, you the person. Yeah? Yaha Shushuptaha, a person who is asleep. Okay? That person who is asleep. And why are they asleep? How do you say they're asleep? Because they get to be asleep. Because their sense organs and mind have gone into resolution, have resolved. Right? They've gone into unmanifest condition. They've gone into their causal condition. So if you're asleep, you don't have any activity in the mind going on, like say nobody's there saying, oh, I'm sleeping, this is a deep sleep, isn't this nice to be in heaven? Mm-hmm. There's no commentary. There's no subject-object relationship. There's no ahankara that's available. No I notion that's available. No karta, no bhokta, no doer. There's nobody saying, I'm sleeping now. There's nobody commenting on the quality of the sleep. I'm sleeping well. That's a bhokta. No karta, no bhokta, no doer, no ahankara, no I notion. The whole mind is in an unmanifest condition in deep sleep. As are all of the sense organs. There's no seeing, there's no hearing. You know, there's no smelling. All five sense organs are resolved at that time. And there's no activity, right? So we could just take it. The sense organs and the mind are in a state of unmanifest condition. So the person who's asleep, why are they asleep? Because their mind and sense organs have gone into that unmanifest condition. They're not functioning. And so being such, how are they then? Well, they're sanmatraha. They simply are being. Sun means being. Matra means simply being. They're simply being without any activity. In the commentary, you'll say without any visheshas, without any commentary. And they're simply the being that you are, minus any commentary, minus any kind of perception, minus any type of cognition, whether it be cognitions that can take place in the dream world or cognitions that are taking place in the waking state. All of those things are gone, so no visheshas, no attributes, no one there to say, you know, I'm a limited jiva, or I am tall or thin or fat, I'm masculine or feminine. There are no attributes applied, right? And so my condition at the time of deep sleep is one of just simply being. There's no ahankara, there's no cognition, there's no consciousness of, which requires an awake mind, a buddhi. So here, this person just simply being, because the sense organs and mind are have been resolved into their causal condition. They're in a condition of pure being covered over by maya, maya samachadanat. Why? Because the maya, which we're used to seeing in terms of, means the whole manifest creation, where everything is awake, right? Where everything is awake, your buddhi is awake, your intellect is awake, your mind is awake, your emotions are awake, your ahankara, the I notion, is awake. You're within this world of five elements, existing as an entity within time and space. Now, so now here in this waking state, you're existing within maya. You're not covered over by maya, you're existing within maya. But what about when the maya resolves, like for you as an individual? What about when the sense organs go back into their unmanifest condition? They go back into maya. They're as though swallowed by maya. What about when the mind goes back into its objective condition? It's now as though samachadanat, it's as though being swallowed and overpowered totally by the objective, by the maya. And so when that happens, everything's in an unmanifest condition. From the standpoint of the awake buddhi, that engages in the world with all of this subject-object relationship and knowership, that has been totally overwhelmed. And so then what is the situation for you? Because you still are. What's the situation for you? Is just amnes your being, who you are being, without commentary. Zero commentary. So I am without commentary. I am even without the commentary of I am without commentary. Right? I can have a commentary. I am without commentary. That commentary is not there. I am sleeping. Commentary not there. I am a conscious being. Commentary not there. Zero commentary. Because everything within manifestation has been overwhelmed or swallowed by Maya. Okay? By the Maya Upadi, by the Avyakta. Avyakta means the unmanifest. Maya is unmanifest form. So what is left, that Puman, that person, who is asleep, is just simply being. All of the sense organs and mind, which allows for subject-object differentiation, is in a manifest condition. Important thing to realize in that sleep is reveals something very important about your nature. And that is that your nature, conscious being that you are, is not a knower, nor is it an enjoyer. If it were a knower or an enjoyer, then when the mind and sense organs go into unmanifest condition, there would be a knowing of that. Mm-hmm. A knowing of that. There is no knowing of that. All visheshas, all of those things that allow for knowership and enjoyership are in unmanifest condition. That's important to understand, because the consciousness we think of, when you think of the word even consciousness, it's consciousness of. I am conscious of you. I know you. Even when we do the Drik Drisha Viveka, the see or seen differentiation, it's this world is known through my sense organs. I am the knower, right? The body is known through my sense organs. I am the knower. The sense organs are known because of my mind illumines the sense organs. I am the knower. Try to get to the nature of the subject. The mind itself is known. I am the knower. Right? I'm the sakshi. As we say, the mind is known. The emotions are known. This is what we actually say, and this is our experience. The emotions are known. My thoughts are known. My feelings are known. Even the one who says, I am feeling this, that is known. Everything, in fact, is known. And everything, in fact, is objectified. Everything is illumined. And so, therefore, then we will say, naturally then, all of these things are known, therefore I am the knower. I, the conscious being, am the knower. We do the subject-object, the Drik Drisha Viveka, all the way to your own being. And so, because all of these things are known, that implies that you are the knower, right? And that's no, it isn't right. It isn't right because if you remove all of these things that you've objectified, remove all of these objects that you see through your sense organs, then remove the sense organs. Okay? So now the subject-object relationship in terms of this world is gone because you've removed the instrument that allows for you to see it. Right, if you're blind, if you don't have any eyes, you're not a knower of names and forms. You're not a knower of color anymore because you've gotten rid of the instrument. Right? If you're deaf, you're not no longer a knower, a hearer of sound because you've gotten rid of the instrument that allows for knowership. Right? What about the mind that has thoughts? Right? If you get rid of the mind, you've gotten rid of the thoughts. Right? The mind that has emotions. You get rid of the mind, you get rid of the emotions. Say you get rid of the I thought, which is the ahankara. You get rid of the I thought. You get rid of the mind, you get rid of the I thought. You know? So these things now, they're not known. Right? No, nor is the mind an instrument for using the sense organs to perceive. Right? Because like if I say, if I'm aware of that painting through my eyes, that's fine, but my mind needs to be using my eyes. If I'm daydreaming, I have my eyes looking at the painting. But if I'm daydreaming, then I don't see anything. So I need the mind. And I said, the mind is known by me. I'm a knower then. So we get to this impasse here. But if there's a subject-object relationship with my mind, this mind that is known, and I get rid of the mind, right? Just hypothetically, just dismiss it because it's an object. Then where is there knowership for the self? Where's the knowership? There's consciousness, all right. But say like this. You get rid of all of the objects that can be, anything that can be objectified. You get rid of all of those things, and now you have the conscious being is left. With what instrument is the conscious being knowing? There's no mind there. There's no sense organs there. So where is there any act of knowing? There is consciousness, conscious being, me, but there's not consciousness of anything. There's just me. Right? It's like, you have to think of it like the example we use is the sun. The sun illumines the world. Okay? Is it illumining the world? Is it saying, let me illumine the world? Let me light up the world. Let me know the world. Is it knowing the world? Or is the world illumined because the sun is? The shining sun is. Is the shining sun doing anything other than being the shining sun to illumine the world? See what I mean? Now, like that, is consciousness. Whatever, you know, is in its wake is illumined. Whatever is in front of it, so to speak, is known. But is it doing anything? And if it's doing something, with what? Does it have any sides? Does it have any parts to say, let me know this, now let me do this? Or do you say, consciousness is just knowing? Now, if you say that, consciousness is just knowing, then you're using knowing as a synonym to consciousness. It's like saying, consciousness is just consciousnessing. It's not performing any activity whatsoever other than being consciousness. And so, that being the case, if I withdraw my sense organs in deep sleep and I withdraw my mind in deep sleep, there are no visheshas means there are no attributes or qualities or things going on now. There's no subject-object relationship. There is nothing known. There's no perception of duality at all. And so what is there for me at that time? There's just my being, sanmatraha, just my pure being. Then what happens? Then at the time of waking up, when I wake up, prabodha means waking up samaye, at the time, prabodha samaye, at the time of waking up from the sleep, then I say, ah, I slept. You say, I was asleep. Prak aswapsam. I just slept. I was asleep before. I'm just waking up now. I was asleep before. Right? How is it that you say that? I was asleep before. Prak means before. Aswapsam. I slept. Yeah? At the time of waking up, you say, oh, I slept. I'm just getting up now. That you can say that means that there's what we call a pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna, this is actually, there's what we call a recollection. And the recollection has to do with you. In other words, say if I say something like this. If I say, that painting, you know, I remember when I bought that painting. Or, no, if I say, oh, I remember that painting, I saw that painting earlier. I remember having seen that painting earlier. Or yes, that book, I read that book. I remember what that book was about. That's not a pratyabhijna. That's what we call a memory. You see something, so I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that. I remember that. Oh yeah, I remember when you were here the other day, that type of thing. When your recollection is directed toward something else, like I've seen that before type of thing, or I remember that, I memorized that and now I remember it, that is called smriti. That's called memory. Pratyabhijna is different than that because it's centered on yourself. It's like when you say, if you were to say that, you know, I remember when I was a little girl, I used to do such and such. Or I remember when I was a little girl, I used to have really long hair. I, the one who am an adult now, this person who is an adult now, used to be a little girl who looked like such and such. So the adult now is the one who is the little girl, who is the little girl. That's a pratyabhijna. It involves the recollection of you having done something or been in a situation previously. There's nothing about you now. It's not this body, mind, sense organ, situation, you know, that exists now. Is not the situation that existed then, right? It's not the same body. It's a grown-up body. That's a little girl body. It's not the same amount of knowledge in the mind. It's not the same place. It's not the same situation, but it is the same person. So I, the one who is a little girl, is the one who is now an adult. And so what we say is that between those two, the little girl and the adult, there's an anuvritti. There's something that goes through, that maintains through those two experiences. So like that, and we'll see this more even in the next verse, it's going to do this more on this pratyabhijna. When I say, I slept last night, what you're saying is I, the one who is asleep, is the one who is now awake, right? So the one who is asleep is now the one who is awake. That means that I was there in deep sleep, even though nothing, I was not conscious of anything, including the physical world that I usually perceive through my sense organs. Nor was there a physical body there, nor were there any thoughts there. There wasn't even an ahankara there. There was all avyakta, only the unmanifest, without anybody commenting on that either, right? So my whole state of experience within Maya was in an unmanifest condition completely. And yet when I wake up, I say, I was the one who slept. I had a deep sleep last night. And not only that, you can also describe it. I slept so well. I didn't wake up the whole night. It was such a deep sleep. You know, I slept, I didn't know anything. I didn't hear anything that was going on. You know, that's pratyabhijna. You can describe the situation and then you own it as you being the one who was there in that situation. It's the same with a dream. You say, when you have a dream, say, oh, I had a dream last night. You know, and then you describe the whole dream world, everything that went on in the dream. It was an incredible dream. So I had this dream. Now I'm here in this waking state. So I am the one who is here, who is the one who is in the dream state, who is the one in the deep sleep state. That's called pratyabhijna. It even is true if I say, yesterday I did such and such. Yesterday I did such and such, and now I'm here today doing such and such. That's a pratyabhijna, where I recognize my presence in a situation which is not with me now. But with the deep sleep state, it's dramatic. You know? You can say, just to kind of understand that situation here, for you just in your human experience, to have a pratyabhijna, to have this type of a recollection, you actually had to have the experience, or you can't have the recollection. Right? Like, can you imagine saying, yesterday I was in San Francisco and I had such and such an experience, when yesterday you weren't in San Francisco and you didn't have such and such an experience? There's no pratyabhijna there. For there to be a pratyabhijna, that'd just be a lie. That's all it is. It's a lie. But there's no pratyabhijna. There's no recollection, that case where the one who is here now had this experience previously. If you had the experience previously, then you have to be the one who is here is the one who had the experience. Now, why it's so powerful when you really kind of sit with that is that if that pratibhinya is there, then you have to see what is here now, right? What is here now that was here then? That what is here now mm-hmm. about me that was there then in that experience? See, in that experience. Because I am the one who am awake and I am the one who was asleep. So I have to be present to both experiences. What is it that is present to both experiences? And that's the thing. That's why deep sleep is so important, you know, because the experience of deep sleep negates everything in the experience of the dream, and it negates everything in the experience of the waking state. It not only negates the world of perception, it negates the perceiver, right? Even in dream, perceiver perceived, waking state, the perceiver perceived. All duality is negated by the deep sleep, and yet the recollection remains the same. And so then you need to do some viveka, some vichara, on who is it that is not negated. And so here what Shankara says, what is negated is your being. What is not negated is your being, the me, the self, the conscious being that you are. Everything else is negated. Conscious being, I say, consciousness and existence are one and the same thing. But it's not consciousness of. It's conscious being. And that's never negated. And that conscious being, why there can be the pratibhijna, is because really the satya mitya. If you look at, we talk about your mind now, your awake mind, you are a conscious being. You say, the mind says, I am a conscious being. And it is. My sense organs are conscious. Yes, sense organs are conscious. Mind is conscious. So the mind will say right now, I am a conscious being. Okay? And that's true. But the question is whether the conscious being requires the mind. You know, can the conscious being be without the mind? That's satya mitya. If the conscious being can be without the mind, then the conscious being is. The mind requires the conscious being to be, and it says, I'm a conscious being. You say, I'm a conscious being. But what if the conscious being is independent of the mind? That's satya mitya. That's the whole Vedanta, really, is in satya mitya. And so now, say the mind, which is continually changing, right? Continually changes, but what remains the same is me, the conscious being. So that's why every thought that you have, every emotion that you have, every feeling that you have is always me. This is my feeling, this is my feeling, this is my feeling. And so it gets more personal than that. I feel happy, I feel sad, I feel tired, I feel whatever. Whatever vritti is in the mind, whatever thought modification in the mind, I pervade that fully. That's my thought, right? But these thoughts go on changing and changing and changing. But what remains the same is me. And on my ownership of thought, this is my thought, this is my thought, this is my thought, the me stays the same. So that pratibhijna, that's always one me through for whom all of these thoughts are. Right? So you have like a thought flow. One thought after another thought after another thought. But what remains exactly the same is the self of all those thoughts. It doesn't flow. The consciousness doesn't flow. The thoughts are flowing along. The me remains exactly the same. But because the me remains exactly the same, every thought which is conscious, enjoys that one changeless conscious being. So now what if we stop the mind? What if we don't even stop the mind, but you're tired and the mind goes to sleep. Right? And so now the mitya mind is in a vyakta, it's an unmanifest condition. There's no thought flow now. The thought flow has gone to sleep. And so now there's just avyekta, there's just nothing. There's nothing to be aware of because it's all an unmanifest condition. So what is left? What is left when the thought flow stops? It's just simply me with nothing to know, right? There's no knowership, there's just me, the conscious being. with no commentary, with no subject-object relationship, nothing, just simply my being. Now, that avyakta state, that unmanifest state of the mind, now wakes up. And now what happens? There's still me, just exactly the same me, but now all of this duality is starting. You've got the knower, the buddhi is back. You know, the mind is back. And what does the mind say? Oh boy, I had a great sleep last night. Okay? Awareness isn't saying, I had a great sleep last night. And awareness isn't saying, I'm awake. Right? Awareness is just simply awareness. Being conscious being is conscious being. There is no commentary. It's not the one doing the talking. Right? But it's the one who is. I am the one who is. So that's why, you know, even in contemplation, like say when you're doing the japa, the repetition of a mantra, just in order to, we use the mantra to get that kind of differentiation between my being and thought flow. And for a while, you use the mantra, repetition of the mantra, like Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, to break just the random thought flow and have a controlled thought flow. That's why we do the mantra. You break kind of the associative thinking just to have a controlled thought flow. And with the controlled thought flow, you can repeat, you gain control of the thought flow by repeating the mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. As you do that, you're breaking that associative thinking so that when by your will you stop the thought flow, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. You stop it, the mind doesn't know what to do next. Right? And so what happens is for the moment, that thought flow, just the mind just becomes quiet. It's not asleep, it just becomes quiet. It allows you to have initially kind of a little peep between the thoughts as though... between an active mind, it gives you a little peek. And then you go again, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. And then you go, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. What you start recognizing as you do this process is that your being is there, silently, quietly, unengaged, asanga. Asanga means not attached to anything. Doing absolutely nothing, not performing an act of knowing, not performing an act at all, just simply present and completely whole unto itself. And in this changeless wholeness of your being, the mantra rises and sets, rises and sets, rises and sets. And we use japa to be able to make that differentiation clear, that in fact, as the thought flow is going on, absolutely nothing is happening to you, nor are you doing anything. You need to be able to recognize that. Japa is excellent for recognizing that. If you can recognize that, then you can recognize it right now. All of this activity, this thought flow, the thought flow because of which I perceive the world with my sense organs, or because of which I can think or imagine or just have unconscious thought flow in a sense, unregulated thought flow and controlled thought flow, all of that thought flow that is taking place is taking place in me who am doing absolutely nothing, who am just whole and full and complete with not performing any type of action at all. And so here you are as a jiva, thinking and free of thought. There's thought going on, you're thinking, you're using your will, you're using your sense organs, all of the things that belong to the jiva. All those things that we can say, you're doing this, you're doing that, you're thinking this, you're thinking that, you're looking at this, you're looking at that. All the while, this maya, all of these instruments within maya are being experienced and functioning fully. At the very same time, there is you who is still and whole and complete and not engaged in any activity at all. And that you is also not away from any activity, just like your mind. Your mind enjoys you. You say your mind is a conscious being. Your mind is a conscious being, it's true. But is the conscious being, which is the very truth of your mind, doing anything, changing? That's why this differentiation has to be made. So now, say that's understood in this waking state. You can do that through japa. You can bring about that. Slow things down so you can recognize, I'm not doing anything. I just am. Mm-hmm. I just am a conscious being. And all of this is taking place in me. And that becomes aparoksha. Aparoksha means it becomes self-evident because you've recognized it. You know? Then we think, this me that is here, silent, asanga, unengaged, not touched or hurt or transformed by any of this interaction, if I think about it, here I am in the waking state. When I go to the dream state, do you realize that the movement from the waking state to the dream state, in terms of the experience that you're having, that actually everything in the waking state has been totally displaced by everything that's experienced in the dream state? It's like the waking universe, experience of the waking universe with me as the seer seen, subject-object relationship that requires this body, this jiva within the waking state. All of the duality I experience as a jiva within it and the world itself is displaced by the dream state where I take another body and experience the subject-object duality, and a whole different scene within the dream state. But I suppose that pratibhijna is there. I, the one who is in the waking state, I'm the one in the dream state. Well, who is that? Who is that one that hasn't been displaced? The seer, the hearer, the thinker, the feeler. Everything that belonged in the waking state has been displaced. The whole jiva upadhi that you use, in the waking state is not there, the one being experienced in the dream state. You take on another body, and it could even be a different sex. It could be an animal body, or it could even be no body. It could be no body, just the experience, without any humans in it at all. But what is left is undoubtedly me. I have no sense of loss of self when I go from the waking state to the dream state. The conscious being that I am just remains exactly the same. It's my dream. It's my waking state. So if I can remember, if I can do that, what we call recognize that anuvritti of my being present in these two states, when everything that I'm aware of, in fact, that I used to identify with is not part of the experience, and then from there I go to the deep sleep state, which absolutely negates all the experience of the waking and the dream. And yet I still am. There's an anuvritti. It's just that in the deep sleep state, nobody's making a comment because the commentator is in unmanifest condition. The seer is in unmanifest condition. The thinker in unmanifest condition. So I have to wait until I wake up for the mind to come back and say, oh wow, that was a great sleep. I had a great sleep. So nothing happens to the sense of I, to the me. I own all three states. And I don't even think about the fact that the experience of those three states totally negate each other. I don't think about that. I don't have to think about it. Because this is another thing to really contemplate on, is again, it's the satya mitya. I don't have to think about that, because the fact is that I am the truth of all three states. I am the one that, if the mind says I am a conscious being, it's saying that because it is a conscious being, just like the clay pot is clay. Right? The clay pot is clay. That's true. And that the mind is a conscious being. It's absolutely true. That's what it is. That's the very substance of it. And when the instead of being the mind experiencing this world through the sense organs, like in the waking state, in the dream state, the dream state reality with a subject-object relationship, that also is the conscious being, right? The dreamer is the conscious being, you know? Just like the pot is the clay. It is that. But the thing is, the conscious being doesn't go through any type of modification. There's nothing which it is not, but it itself doesn't go through any type of modification. It is what's stable. And since, because it is what's stable, and because it is what's the truth of all of our experience, what fills all of our experience, we never notice anything strange about the total change in nature of experience. We don't notice anything strange about it because we're not changing. Even though everything about the experiences, everything on every level really, come and go. On every level they come and go. It's not a problem because nothing happens to me and I am the truth of the whole thing. I am the truth of what's actually there. That's why even, you know, it's such shocking when you, it can be a shock when you wake up from a dream. You're very engaged in a dream and you wake up from it and the whole dream is gone. But, you know, that there's a take-it-for-grantedness of the experience that dream that was so real that is now gone, you take it for granted the experience of nothing happening to you. Is that how I can say that? When you wake up from a dream and the whole dream is gone, the whole thing's gone, completely gone, that nothing has happened to you, you take for granted. Nothing has happened to you, but that's not odd to you. It's not odd, because it's been our experience from beginningless time, and there is not a ripple of change in you, and so the dream is just naturally dismissed as a dream. It's naturally dismissed as a dream. Even though when the dream was there, you were totally, could have been, probably, if you're identified with a character in the dream, you are that character. In the dream, you are that character. And you are experiencing the dream. But the fact is that you are that character. That's true. Just like the pot is the clay. You are that character, even in the dream. In fact, from the standpoint of every character in the dream, you are that character. That character will say, I am the conscious being. I am a conscious being. I am a conscious being. They can talk. They'll say, I am a conscious being. If the animal can talk, the animal will say, I'm a conscious being too. The plant will say, I'm a conscious being. As long as they have a sukshma sharira, their subtle body, they'll be able to like mirror consciousness and own that consciousness. I am the conscious being. But the thing is, it is true. It is true. Yeah? What is so interesting, though, is that when that dream goes away, no one experiences any death. Because why? Because there isn't any death. What is the truth? It's like with a clay pot. The clay, the pot, can't experience a death because there is no pot. There's only clay. What is really there is clay. And the clay doesn't die. It's like if the wave ocean may be clear. If the wave gets flattened out and disappears, who has died? Because nothing has happened to the water, right? The wave doesn't exist apart from the water, and nothing happens to the water. So here, all of these forms don't have any other substance except for the sat-chit, for me. And so when they come and go, it's totally irrelevant to me. It doesn't touch me in any way. And so we use in this teaching methodology these experiences that we have, the waking state, the dream state, and then ultimately this deep sleep state. And then waking up again to show that nothing happens to you. All of these things that make you you, you think, come into being and go out of being and nothing happens to you. Nor do you even think anything happens to you. You don't even think about it. You take it for granted. Another thing that I find so incredible, because it's just, it's a miniature of the whole creation of knowledge, is that when you have a dream and you're not a figure in the dream, you know, you don't have to be identified with anyone in the dream. You're just having a dream. What if there's no people in the dream? You know, what if you're just having a dream like of a city or of a meadow or the forest, or you're having a dream with the ocean, there's no people there? Or you're having a dream with people in it, but you're not identified with one of them. Aren't you worried that now... I mean, isn't that worrisome? You're having this dream. You're not a person in the dream. You're just the dream universe, whatever that is. And you know what? That is completely fine. You don't think, oh dear, I'm the dream universe now. I'm not a person in the dream. You don't even think about it. That swarup, that nature of yours, is fine. That's Ishvara. That's Ishvara's situation. Ishvara doesn't think, oh, I don't have a body. I'm not identified with the body, I'm the whole. Just like you don't think in your dream, you don't think, oh, I'm not identified with the body, I'm the whole. You don't even think about it. Because whether you are, from the standpoint of the self, whether you've taken on the form of a body, it's from the standpoint of the body that you've taken on the form, not from the standpoint of the self. The self's not saying, I'm a body or I'm the whole. It's not commenting. It just doesn't have any time, doesn't have any space, it's just simply being. And so from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, that it, when it's like when the mind says, I'm a conscious being, the conscious being is its truth. That's absolutely true. Whether Ishvara says, I am a conscious being, absolutely true. Whether your dream with a body says, I'm a conscious being, you know, or doesn't say it, but that's the reality of it. Or a figure in the dream is a conscious being, absolutely true. But what isn't true is that there's any division. There's only conscious being, which is the self of this whole thing. Now, that has to be recognized. It can't just be theoretical information, you know? Then you're just having a Vedanta lecture, right? It can't remain as theoretical information. It's something that you have to recognize. And so you can recognize, you can understand all of this and then contemplate on it. That's useful. That's what we call nididhyasana. But when we do something, a prakriya, teaching methodology like waking, dream, and deep sleep, we're talking about actual experience that you have. Mm. We're pointing out your experience, you know. And so the words have to land on the experience that you have and have had so that you can see. Like the words have to point to the reality of your experience so you can see the continuation of your being in spite of the coming and going of all of these experiences. And you can see that pratibhigna, you can see that you have that recollection of self, of being the one who is in this experience. And now in this experience, though everything in this experience is negated by everything in this experience, nevertheless, I am not negated. The I, the self, is not negated. The words are negated. The I thought is negated. But the self is not negated. In the deep sleep also, where there is no creation, the self is not negated. Knowership is negated. Form is negated. Creation is negated. The me is not negated. The creation comes and goes and comes and goes and comes and goes, subject, you know, everything changing continually. But it's changing in what is not changing. Right? The change is taking place in the changeless. I am the changeless. And so this has to be differentiated. That's why these teaching methodologies. If you think about it with the see or seem differentiation, at first we do in reference to this waking state. What we're doing is starting by differentiating the subject, me, making you see that there's a subject-object relationship with everything that you experience. The world that you experience through your sense organs, subject-object. You experience your sense organs with the mind, subject-object. You experience the mind is known, subject-object. Then I have to see, who is that subject that's left over? Right? Everything else has been objectified. Who is that one that's left over? Who am I? The subject that can be differentiated from the object. And then we have to ask, you know, how can this subject that I am be different from you. If I've objectified all these things, if we've all objectified everything, what makes this consciousness different from you? There's so much teaching just from the standpoint of the waking state to make you recognize that you who are stable. But then if you go to the dream, go now to another teaching methodology which even goes outside of this waking state and looks at the dream state and the deep sleep state, where you who are the waker are the you who is the dreamer, where the dreamer totally negates everything in the waking experience. And the deep sleep also negates everything in the waking and dream experience, and you still are. So who remains in your experience? See, in your experience, the one thing that can't be negated is you. Right? If the experience goes and you go with it, then you're gone. But if the experience goes and you remain, right, then you're not that experience. The experience is gone. You were there during the experience and you're there after the experience. It's even as true with this. If opening my eyes, I see color. If I close my eyes, I don't see color. Okay? So what does it mean? The perception of color is dependent upon my eyes. We accept that. But the fact is that when my eyes are open, I don't see color. Where I see color, when my eyes are closed, I don't see color. And I still am. Right? And so the experience of color is not necessary for me, for my being. For me to be me, I do not require the experience of color. Otherwise, when I close my eyes, I would go away. The self experience would go away. Just like you close your eyes, the color experience goes away. If you have your eyes open, you are here, and you're experiencing color. You close your eyes, you are here, and you're not experiencing color. You have this thought, you're experiencing this thought, happy thought, you are here experiencing the happy thought. The happy thought goes away, there's a sad thought, and you're here experiencing the sad thought. Right? So you have to be able to differentiate. In your experience, what can you get rid of and what can't you get rid of? There's only one thing you can't get rid of. You can't get rid of yourself. You can't get rid of the self experience. You can't turn it off. You know? You can't even put it into avyekta. But the world into avyekta, being you can't put into avyekta. Okay. Let's stop there. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
What is lucid dreaming?
Lucid dreaming is, I can just define it for you. Lucid dream is when you're dreaming and you're aware that you're dreaming. You're conscious of your dreaming and the dream doesn't go away. Like usually when you wake up from a dream, the dream goes away. But what if you are awake when the dream is taking place so that you're aware of yourself and the dream?
But you're not talking about daydreaming.
No, I'm not talking about daydreaming, because daydreaming can also not be a lucid dream.
Yeah.
Daydreaming would be the daydreaming is taking place, but you're conscious to the daydream. That's why sometimes, you know, the problem with using dream as an example for Ishwara is that when we think of dreaming, you're not conscious that you're dreaming. You're still a samsara, you're a character in the dream. That's why I often will say for Ishwara, and why now I use the meadow imagination or something, you know, is to make a lucid dream means that there's no ignorance there.
Oh, you just mean projecting your imagination in this case? Or?
I like to use that now instead of dream, because like if I ask you to imagine a meadow,
right,
then there's no ajnana. There's only manifest knowledge. It's limited manifest knowledge. Like say, imagine the ocean. Mm-hmm. Then you're calling on your ocean knowledge, and it becomes manifest, or your meadow knowledge. Or Swamiji's using like limitless, the manifestation of limitless knowledge for Ishwara now. So if you use like something like a meadow or anything, it doesn't matter what it is, that comes into manifestation, it's just consciousness. So there's no ajnana. So sometimes it's you can say, instead of using the dream analogy, you say lucid dream. Because then there's no ajnana, there's no ignorance.
But don't you think the imagination, using the imagination, gives you a better sense of what Maya is like?
I think so.
Yeah, 'cause for the projecting.
Because what you have on a... what Ishwara has on an infinite level, infinite knowledge, you know, infinite capacity, is the whole Maya Upadi. You have in a limited degree, you know. Like you have your little bit of your. If you imagine the meadow, you're like the Ishwara of the meadow. But because the meadow has come from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. Your consciousness is of the whole meadow, right? You're the Lord of the meadow. The characters in the meadow can pray to you, please help me. You know, and then you can take a body like an avatar and go into the meadow and help it. So it's good. It works better, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everything has its limitations, you know, but still, that's pretty good for as something as a tool for understanding.
I also thought it was very helpful noticing the I am, the meanness.
Uh-huh.
You can't turn it off. I mean, you could change your thinking.
No, you can't turn it off. Yeah, there's nothing you can do. That's why another good meditation is to imagine yourself as non-existent. You know, like try. You try to just get rid of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or even more of a Buddhist term like the Chunyata, where you can look at this universe as being empty, empty of essence, but you can then also look at the absolute being as being empty of names and forms. So one thing to do is just eliminate, think of everything as not try to reach non-existence, get rid of everything, just blot everything out. And then what you're left with, or if I say it like in Shunyata in that way, get rid of all names and forms, everything, completely. And then what is left?
Me.
That is Brahman. That is, yeah, Brahman, which is me. But the me word, you know, if you're going to use the word like me or self or Atma, you can only do that to keep that word. You have to, and to reveal the meaning of that word, Atma, the self, you have to remove from it everything that's been superimposed on it. See, because this body is superimposed on me, so I am the body. Right? So I have to differentiate the Atma from this body so that I can recognize the body totally depends upon awareness, on being, but being doesn't depend on it. So you have to differentiate, and then the Atma, the self, is free of the body. You can't define it by the body anymore. Same with the sense organs. We think of, you know, these are my sense organs. They have to be differentiated. And then the Atma is free of the sense organs, free of the mind, same thing. Free of the Ahankara, free of all name and form. Because I've superimposed all of these things onto me as though I am this. Mm. You know? But the fact is, the body, mind, sense organs are the Atma, and the Atma is totally free of the body, mind, sense organs. Otherwise, there's two things. There's a body, mind, sense organs over here and Atma over here. So we're trying to kind of, as though I'm seeing the body, mind, sense organs. It's not true. The Atma is being itself. And it's from the stand, the mind superimposes itself. Then it thinks, because I am the self is. The body, if the body with the mind, it'll say, because I am.
You are.
Yeah, because I am the self is. As long as the body says, as long as I am alive, the self is alive. As long as the mind is happy, the self is happy. Because it's total superimposition. So that has to be, we have to pull that apart. We have to differentiate. So you can recognize the you that is never compromised or changed or in any way and is by nature whole and complete. The mind isn't whole and complete. The mind is always changing and it's going through all kinds of different things at different times. Mm. But the self isn't. Your self is stable.
Carol? I find that I'm pretty attached to consciousness as being knowing, because if I think about sleep, I have this thought of like, okay, so yeah, I know that I've been asleep because I wake up, and I could say, oh, I've been asleep.
Yeah.
But what if I didn't wake up? I mean, what if I just was always asleep? Then I wouldn't know anything.
Yeah, now there, exactly. Subject of the... Okay, version of the story, it's a good question, though. You know, when we look at the example, I didn't get enough into this particular example. Maybe I can try to do it quickly now. When the mind is awake, right, then there's a sense of knower known, there's sense organs, there's thoughts. There's activity going on in the mind. Okay, but this same mind, when it as an instrument, it goes into unmanifest condition, then from the standpoint of that mind, there's no activity going on. There's nothing going on. That's why they're using the example of that Rahu eats the sun, you know? And so when sleep comes, it's like sleep eats the buddhi. It takes it into darkness, you know. It like swallows it. So it goes back into its unmanifest condition. It's like Rahu coming. And it's as though Rahu is coming and covering the self. Because from the standpoint of the awake mind that can say, I am the conscious being, that awake mind can no longer say that. It's like Rahu has come. You know, and caused an eclipse from the standpoint of the buddhi. The buddhi has been swallowed by Rahu. And so there's as though nothing at all happening. It's like everything is dark, except that being itself is still remaining there. But there's no thinking, there's no consciousness of anything from the standpoint of samsara, right? Because this unmanifest Maya is there, and we're talking from the standpoint of that unmanifest Maya. Now, say that's the Rahu example, where that mind goes into unmanifest condition. Now, instead of that, let's look at what we call the Samadhi example, you know, Nirvikalpa Samadhi, where now the mind, the buddhi, is not going into unmanifest condition. It's not being eclipsed. The self is not as though being eclipsed by the buddhi, going into unmanifest condition. The buddhi, rather, is completely awake, but it's no longer has any focus whatsoever on anything within duality. It's like the pot is only focused on the clay. The pot form is only focused on the clay. Here the buddhi, you know, instead of having thought flow or having perceptions, or imaginations or any type of activity whatsoever, the mind has become quiet, not only quiet, become completely quiet, not an unmanifest condition, still awake, but completely quiet, and not just quiet, because if it's just quiet, like a clear slate of glass, then there's this sense of quiet. There's a sense of quiet, a sense of peace, but not just me. That there's myself aware of the silent mind. But it's fine. There's consciousness aware of the silent Shantavritti. But what about when that mind, instead of just being quiet, turns its attention to the consciousness which illumines it? Turns its attention to itself, the truth of itself. You know? Then what is that condition? It's just pure consciousness, just pure me, without any type of vritti of anything else. There's nothing else happening but me. Okay? Mm-hmm. That is different than this Rahugrasta. That's different than the eclipse state. So now we have to look at what the difference is. One, the mind is not in unmanifest condition. It's completely awake, right? It's not eclipsed, right? And it's awake to its own being. So now the consciousness, which is the truth of the mind, is illumining a mind which is not asleep, but it has no content other than the self. It's like holding up a mirror to the self. But the mind is not asleep. It's not, it hasn't been swallowed. But in the case of deep sleep, the mind is now not awake to the world at all, but the mind itself has been swallowed and is in unmanifest condition. And so that mind is not having any type of experience, no kind of reflective experience. It's not reflecting the self. It is in unmanifest condition. And so, well, let me put it this way. That's not quite right. It's in unmanifest condition, and so the awareness that is illumining it is illumining unmanifest condition that is not making a comment on anything. And so now, where that's not the case in this side, there's still no comment, but the self is not illumining a mind in unmanifest condition. In either case, there's no commentary, right, at all. There's no duality, there's no commentary. But when the person comes out of nirvikalpa samadhi, they don't say, I was deep sleeping. They don't say, I was a great sleep, I didn't know anything, you know. You know, the way you would describe deep sleep, I didn't know anything, I was sound asleep. That's the deep sleep description.
Well, what do you say?
But when the person comes out of nirvikalpa samadhi, they're not going to say like that. Mm. You know?
What would they say?
They'll try to describe the experience. We would describe it Vedantically. You'd say, I am limitless being. I am limitless awareness. I am the whole. You would, you know, you describe it for what it is. You don't describe it like you describe a deep sleep state. But the deep sleep state is a state where the mind is in its causal condition. And so it's not having any type of experience other than causal condition. Whereas in the waking state, if the mind resolves into the self, or even now, say for somebody who has knowledge, the same self is completely here now, but the mind is not asleep. The mind is not asleep, and so it has something to say about that. You know? But here the mind is swallowed. And I don't know if they, I'm trying to paint a picture for you of the difference, but it's...
Mm-hmm. I still think, in terms, because you said something like, I'm not in this section we see that I'm not the knower. I still think that I'm not the knower, I'm not the Sakshi is better explained through other means.
There are a lot of different means.
Because you don't run into that many problems.
I see. But you know, you have to explain deep sleep, though.
No. I'm all for that. But in terms of connecting it with I'm not the knower, I think that's better connected with I'm also the known. I'm not just the subject. I'm also the object.
Yeah.
It's like better if you go that route, because then you have some more to work with.
Yeah, that's true. I don't say it's better. I just say that there's different prakriyas, and they all have a purpose. And as they're all being used, one prakriya takes care of one little one area, and then you bring in, prakriya means a teaching methodology, then you bring in another, and then that clears that one, and then you bring in another, and that clears that one. Knowing that I'm both subject and object, and that whole thing is very important. Satya everything breaks down into satya mitya, but all of these things, that I'm both the subject and object, the knower, the known, all of that, you know, you have to do all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them, like everybody has little knots here, you know, they're just little areas that are not understood. And then one prakriya comes in and it just touches that area and releases it. And then when an area is released by it, you see it, and then that has a domino effect. Then another prakriya that you'd heard many, many times comes in, oh, that's what that meant. I remember even with Swamiji using certain words, and I don't have remember the examples right now, but using certain words that it just never really worked for me. And then on one day I would just see it. Oh, that's what he meant all these years. using that word, that's what he meant there. And it was really kind of shocked me. One I do remember, that this one I'd never worked for me, when he talked about, because didn't work, where we talked about what does ananda really mean in reference to the nature of yourself, because it doesn't mean bliss, like these bliss experiences that come and go, but they call it ananda. And he used to always say ananda is Ananta, which it is, Satyam Jnanam Ananta, or Satchit Ananda. Ananta means without end, limitless. It's without, literally it means without end, it's limitless. So he used to say, the Ananda is the limitlessness of yourself. And it didn't work. Limitlessness of yourself. How could the limitlessness of yourself is the Ananda? And I was, how does...
And then what happened?
And then I saw it one day. I saw that is what it is. I saw it experientially. Yes, that is exactly what it is. And then I thought, oh my gosh, he's meant that all along. He's seen that all along. I never saw it that way. And then I saw it that way, and I was shocked that I saw it that way. You know, the unencumbered, the total unencumbered nature of your being, you know, is total ananda. It's already here right now, but it's the total unencumberedness of being. Anyway, it's just I saw how he was using those words and what he meant, and I hadn't seen it before. You know, and then there was another one it slips my mind right now. Another one that was, I don't think I've remembered that one for a long time. I'll ask my mind to remember. Maybe it will. But there was another two or three like that, you know, that he'd been saying the same thing for a long,
some other,
long,
other
long
things,
time.
Other things fell into place for you to have that kind of
And those are just words, but also, you know, there's teaching methodologies or things to be understood that, every psyche has its own order. So the psyche says, you know, I have to understand this before I can understand that. And then when those orders, you click them off, you don't know when you're ever going to get the right order, you know. But as it keeps coming, the right order keeps coming, and then things get
clear. And that's a little different for each person.
I think it is.
Every mind, right? I mean, a little different.
Yeah. And like doubts that would be very important for one person are, they just are not a doubt for another person.
Mm-hmm.
But for one person, that particular doubt is critical, and for another person, that isn't a doubt. And that's very interesting, too, that is. Yeah? And that's why also, you know, the commentaries, when we're teaching here, I read all of the commentaries and everything, but we're usually just teaching the verses. But if you read through the commentaries, they come up with doubt after doubt after doubt and answer them to cover all of the bases, because one student may have that doubt. Or the teacher who's writing the commentary, these are their sets of doubts that they put down for you. Okay, I had this doubt, maybe you will too. And then resolves.
But it seems like if you don't have a samadhi experience, then you won't really get it.
You need to... The samadhi experience also can be very misleading because people have notions about what that is. But actually, you know, at the time of teaching itself, there's these seeing. You see it, you see it, you see it. Those are those little... I am the whole, you see it. Every one of those is a type of samadhi experience because it's that moment that you see. But usually when we think of samadhi, we think of, you know, like this and going into nirvikalpa and holding it for a while and coming out. And all. Mm-hmm. But actually these samadhi experiences, which are seen, and they even involve seeing just being with myself or recognizing myself as the whole, where you see it, that's a samadhi experience. Happens over and over again at the time during the time of teaching. But then also with Nitta Dhyasana, you slow everything down and sit in one of these, you know, where there's an unfoldment taking place, taking the mind like in slow motion to see, setting up an environment where it has time to just sit there and see it. So usually when you think of samadhi, you think of going into deep meditation and then having kind of a non-dual samadhi experience that lasts for some period of time, rather than, and remember too that when you have those types of recognitions, there is no time really. Oh, I was in samadhi for 5 minutes, but the self, there's no time there. Yeah, there's no 5 minutes for the self. No. So it's those moments of seeing.
So when you have that feeling, if you get an insight during the class, that's very authentic, then, isn't it?
That's right, and that's what a teaching methodology is striving to do for you, is to create step by step by step, taking the mind step by step by step to the recognition of something. That's what makes it a pramana, a means of knowledge. Otherwise, it's not a means of knowledge, it's a lecture. A means of knowledge means the prakriya. These methodologies are meant to make your mind see what is being said, to recognize what is being said. Aparoksha, to directly, immediately recognize what is being said. Otherwise, you know, it's like a lecture on Advaita Vedanta. Advaita Vedanta says this, and then you talk about it, and then you go into the next subject, and you talk about that, and the next subject, and the student's taking notes, you know. But that isn't Vedanta. Vedanta is meant to use the words in such a way that the mind just sits in it and sees it. Swamiji will take a topic sometimes, and he's the master. Swamiji is the master. You know, nobody can even touch him, really. To take something he wants you to see, and he'll just stay there. Sitting round and round and round, and this way and that way and this way and that way, holding the mind in it, because your mind can't just hear. Say you say one sentence, then you say the next sentence, then you say the next sentence. Well, what was meant to be seen is, you know, you have to stay with the sentences have to be, all of the sentences have to be holding that vision, not moving from that vision. So that takes a certain, that's the certain way of teaching, which is different. You know, a lecture can even be like kind of reading a book, where you read this paragraph and this paragraph, and you move right along. And then you would go back and read that first paragraph again and second paragraph, you know. If you say, oh, I didn't really understand what I read, so you go back and read it again. Maybe this is kind of like that. Here's this paragraph. And we're just going to sit in this paragraph for a while.
Yeah.
Now we'll sit in this next paragraph for a while. And in fact, even when we do manana and study the texts, you don't study the texts like you just read them. You study the text sentence by sentence. You know, to really, you work on that to understand it, and then you move to the next one. You work to understand it. It's not reading a novel. You know, it's meant to be seen.
I thought tonight's class was just incredible.
Good, eh? Sometimes we're ready.